Today on Maine Calling, arts, health, and healing. If you've ever sung in a chorus, painted a picture, taken a dance class, or molded clay into a piece of pottery, you know that creating art can feel good. Researchers say it's more than just a feeling. There's evidence that arts can help us ward off disease or heal from an illness. And as it turns out, you don't even have to be the one creating the art. Attending a performance or going to an exhibit can also be beneficial. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we will discuss the connection between arts, health, and healing. We'll learn what the latest research shows and learn about arts initiatives in Maine promoting health and restorative healing. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Support for Maine Calling comes from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure throughout Maine. Now open in Bangor, Waterville, and Augusta. And by Maine Seacoast Mission, delivering health care, education, and support to islands and coastal downeast communities. Learn more at seacoastmission.org.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Turns out going to a concert, a dance, or a museum isn't just fun, it can have real health benefits. Today we'll discuss emerging research on how the arts can promote health and restorative healing. We'll also learn about some arts initiatives here in Maine promoting this connection. My guest for the hour, Alisa Tiedemann, who is Research Program Manager with the International Arts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins University. Matt Cahill is co-founder and creative director of Hogfish Regenerative Arts, and Christina Carraz is the program director of the Maine Arts Commission Arts and Health Roundtables. We invite you to join the conversation. Have you noticed how engaging with the arts can put your mind at ease or even have more noticeable health effects? Send us an email. talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Welcome to all of you. Alisa, I'm going to start with you. The Hearts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins does so much interesting research. And I'm learning from your website and looking into this, that this is an entire field, isn't it, called neuroaesthetics. It seems to me, reading some of the research, that our understanding is rapidly expanding, that right now it's sort of the tip of the iceberg. Is that right?
Yeah, that's absolutely true. Thank you so much for having me. I'm really excited to be here and talk about the field of neuroarts, which is looking at how arts and aesthetic experiences can influence health, well-being, human behavior, strengthen communities. Really, the list is kind of endless of the benefits that we can get from arts engagement. And yeah, I think this is something that artists and community arts programs have always known. And what's exciting is this growing body of evidence that is really showing us the physiological changes that can happen, as well as all the mental health benefits, and really kind of across different sectors, across public health, psychology, we're seeing just this evidence really coming to the forefront. So it's a really exciting time to be a part of this research.
Well, and just last month, you published a big study about arts engagement and trauma recovery. What did you find?
Yes, that was our study that was looking at a program out of Seattle, actually, called Path with Art. And they are a community-based arts program that works with people who have experienced trauma, including veterans, people who have experienced homelessness. And we looked really at aspects that are related to trauma recovery. So mental well-being, social connectedness, and self-efficacy. And we saw across each of those that participating in these programs with Path with Art, they had positive benefits both on psychological measures as well as just in the exit surveys. So some really, really promising research for this type of community arts programming.
Well, Christina, you organized the Maine Arts and Health Roundtables. What are these and what's their goal?
Yeah, the roundtables gathered throughout the fall. We had eight of them. The goal was to bring together practitioners, artists, anyone doing art that felt that it impacted their well-being, kind of building off of the trauma research. We had a veterans roundtable, and veterans said that the arts saved their life. And I think that is really, at the end of the day, what this work can do is it can save lives. And it's for everybody. We all consume art every day. And so the roundtables are an opportunity for people to talk about what they're doing in the arts as related to their health. And we're going to be doing another series of roundtables in the fall and winter, and we're looking again for new topics and speakers. And so there's you can go on our website and fill out a form to be one of those speakers if you'd like, and be happy to talk to you about it.
And Christina, how have you found the medical community? Have they been welcoming of this conversation?
Yeah, we had the convening at Maine Health Lifestyle in Brunswick, Lifestyle Medicine, and the health community is very open to it. In fact, there was a program at the University of Maine in Arts and Health that was a certification that was very popular. And you know, the University of Florida has its Arts and Medicine program, so it is a growing, as was said, it's a growing and large field. Which is very exciting.
Matt Hogfish, the group that you co-founded and lead, promotes something called regenerative arts. I'm having trouble saying it. And I'm
You're
thinking
not
that
the
that
only one.
term may sound a little out there to some, a little woo-woo.
Yeah.
So why don't you
Yeah.
explain to us what you mean by regenerative arts?
No, totally. This is a topic of much discussion amongst us about what is the best word for what we're trying to do. And we keep returning to regenerative. And that was because we got married, my husband and I, my co-founder, Edwin Cahill, who's originally from Maine, at Wolf's Neck Center for Agriculture. And they do regenerative agriculture. And that had me ask, what is regenerative agriculture? And when I heard the principles about being part of the solution instead of the least amount of problem, that led me to think, like, what would that mean for the arts? If we were to think in that way, in this kind of systemic way of making change in our communities and for individuals. So that's why we have arrived at the tag regenerative arts, and we hope to live up to it. Yeah, and it's been interesting with an investigation to realize that so much of this is also indigenous knowledge that has been kept by Wabanaki people, often against our own oppression and violence for so many years. And so how also to address that concern and to learn from and get in better relationship with the land and each other and all the people who live here without appropriating but lifting up all voices. So that's an ongoing question we ask a lot too.
Yeah, well, Matt, tell us about the performance you have coming up, Holy Unwinding, and Holy is Holly.
Yeah, we might have to start saying like holy or something instead of holy unwinding to make that clear in audio. But yes, we're really excited. It's the first time. So to make regenerative arts, the big principle for us, one of them in agriculture, is biodiversity. And thinking through that is like, how do we foster diverse viewpoints in the performing arts field, in the stories that we hear, that when we like think of a leader or we think of a powerful or we think of love, what stories come to mind that we draw on that we think we're so independent, but we're actually drawing from all this art throughout the ages? And what can we do to foster and incubate stories that help everyone feel that they belong and have a place in this world? And as a gay kid growing up, I know how powerful it was to watch Will and Grace and to slowly be accepted by community and invited by Maine itself. So that was already a story that allowed us to be here. And so as our residency, we do a big show that centers a traditionally marginalized community. And then we also give those artists who come to do the show a residency and say, what do you want to make? How can we support you to tell your story from the ground up? And this is really exciting with Holy Unwinding because it's the first time that a show started in the residency and grew bit by bit by bit by bit and became the main stage show. And it's by Hayley McAvoy, who's been with us 3 summers. This is her fourth. And she is a wonderful mezzo-soprano. And she is also an artist who has cerebral palsy. And her journey to embodiment and loving her body again led her on this path to a thing that I teach called the Alexander Technique, which is a hands-on healing mind-body awareness technique that's taught in a lot of conservatories like Juilliard, where I first experienced it. She just started having dreams and visions of what this was and what was happening. And it was the first time in her life that she felt like she was actually being listened to about what her body needed instead of being told what to do or put into surgeries. And it was her way of processing. So it relates so much to me of like, Alisa, what you were saying of drama therapy and music therapy and getting people to tell their stories and supporting them and then cultivating a community to listen. It's going to be July 22nd, 24th, and 25th at Halo at the Point. The music's kind of a mashup between Carole King and Joni Mitchell meets Hildegard von Bingen and Bach, because those are all the things that Haley loves. There's like a killer 80s power ballad like Whitney Houston, which I'm excited about. And we collaborate with Double House Arts Collective to do a gallery with art from the local community with disabilities to share how it's not just Haley's story. It's the largest marginalized community on the planet, I learned through this process. And that if we're lucky, we're all going to go there. and then at the end, we have an inclusive dance party in collaboration with Spark Inclusive Arts so that everyone can dance together. Because again, these things that have been done since time immemorial of dancing together, making music together, seems to really bring community together in addition to being Haley's story.
Alisa, what do we know about what's going on? How come arts can help us heal? Is it because, you know, there's so much we're learning now about how stress affects health? Is it because when we participate in arts, all the, you know, sort of bad chemicals that we that come with stress go away, or is it something else? Or are there many different things going on?
Yeah, I don't think we can kind of boil it down to a simple answer. And I think it's also can be really individualized for different people. So in a lot of the research that we're finding, so talking about the path with art that I just mentioned, some people say that the kind of social connection was the biggest factor for them of or having that sense of kind of community. For other people, it was the kind of transformative experience of pouring themselves into something and creating something, or being able to verbalize something or not being able to express something that they haven't been able to actually verbalize, but being able to express that in a tactile way or through a visual art. So I think, you know, it really varies between obviously the art form and then the individual person and what they're able to, what kind of benefits they get from it. And I think, you know, like I said, we're seeing a lot as well as just the physiological changes that are able to happen in, you know, reducing, like you said, different chemicals and or neurotransmitters that are released when you're participating in some of these things. And so there's just so much more to explore. And, you know, I think the answer is always going to be more complicated than one factor, though.
We'll go to Steve, who's calling from Freeport. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi there. Thanks very much. Great program. I wanted to explore one aspect of the arts, namely music. I've been reading a book that I'd love people to know about. Maybe you do know about this. It's called I Heard There Was a Secret Chord, Music as Medicine. It's written by the neuroscientist and musician Daniel Levitin. And it updates a lot of what we know about the brain. It is a fascinating book, but in my own personal life as a young lad, my folks exposed me to music through records. And I learned quickly, though I had no idea what was going on, that it could evoke emotions that, you know, if you have a good cry, you'll feel better. The storm's over and life looks better. And I did a little bit of that as a young lad. And it just, and then I discovered in church I could harmonize reasonably well and that it was very uplifting. And it sort of stayed with me. I've been in bands and enjoyed that. But this is a fabulous book that I highly recommend.
Well, thank you for recommending it. And Matt, there is something about singing, and there's something about singing with others.
Yes. It's a powerful thing. I've been singing all my life, and I teach singing, and I still don't quite understand why it's so powerful. But it's something we feel. And it's exciting for me, too. I mean, we experiment with a lot of these things, these books that we're reading, and I where I get excited is trying to implement these for the greatest health and wellness of our community and our individuals, and the power of really inviting the audience to sing. I mean, in a lot of the performances that never happens, And that's why we do it pretty much every time we get together.
Steve, thank you. Let's see, we'll go to Michael calling from Falmouth. Hi, Michael, go ahead.
How are you? You know, in this world dominated by technology, I mean, just sitting beside others and sharing a live experience is profoundly healing. At my theater, the Footlights Theater, over the last 13 seasons, we found that the age 45 and up patron demographic really benefits from theater and concerts because it stimulates memory and it encourages movement and builds friendships. It also offers a safe place for those, you know, facing illness and grief and trauma or caregiving, you know, to process their experiences and find comfort and simply escape. You know, I believe the arts are places where people go to heal. And sometimes the best medicine, you know, isn't found in a prescription bottle. It's just, it's found in a song or a story or a painting or a dance.
Michael, thank you for calling in. And Elisa, it's interesting you use the word prescription because that is some of the research that you are focusing on is docs or healthcare providers actually prescribing arts.
Yeah, we did a study in Massachusetts on Culture Rx, which was a social prescription program that was actually prescribing going to the theater or going to museum or different types of arts and culture experience. And I think actually what was one of the really interesting findings from this study was maybe something we weren't as expecting as much, but the providers who were providing the prescriptions also saw a huge benefit that they felt like they were able to help patients in a new way and a way that, you know, obviously historically has not been taught in med school, but they were able to kind of change up how they practice in a way and hear the positive benefits that, you know, people were experiencing by engaging in these things. And that made them feel like a better provider, that they were really, you know, offering something that maybe people hadn't really thought about before. And I think what's really cool too is this can be across, you know, across the lifespan. You know, the caller mentioned older individuals 45 and over, but this can also, there's tons of research in early education and for, we're doing a lot of research in adolescence right now. And so there's really, you know, so many different people that could benefit from that type of social prescription.
Yeah. Christina, did you have something to add?
Yeah, I just want to say that at the Commission, we're exploring social prescription with the United Way of Southern Maine. We are looking for grant funding to work with the ALIS population. Those are people who have just above the poverty line. So pretty much 75% of Maine, so that they could access through Portland Health these prescriptions. Maybe it is a dance class for Parkinson's disease, which we know can reduce falls by 30%, reduce the need for medications, and, you know, bring people together so that it affects the depression and social isolation. So social prescription is also something that is being looked at by most state art agencies, and there's funding flowing nationally towards arts and health in general. But we have seen Massachusetts, New York, Connecticut all have social prescribing programs, and it's the model in Europe, in the UK. So there's empirical evidence that it works, and it can be embedded, as we already know, because for thousands of years people have been using the arts to heal. That we can bring this to Maine, and we can work to, dare I say, solve our healthcare crisis. It can be a bridge to healing.
Michael, thanks for your call. Calling in now is Johanna Franzel, who is a biodynamic craniosacral therapist, and I'm going to ask her to explain what that is. Also a teacher and audio producer and the author of the new book that will be out next week called Write Yourself Home. Johanna, thanks so much for calling in.
Thanks so much for having me, Jen. I'm really delighted to be here.
So explain what a biodynamic
conversation.
Yeah, tell us what a biodynamic craniosacral therapist is.
Yeah, I mean, without getting too much into the weeds, it's a way of supporting a nervous system. It's maybe a little bit of a cousin to what Matt shared around his work with Alexander Technique. So it's really helping folks of any condition have more ease in their felt sense moving through the day. And it was incredibly helpful for me because one of the principles that I'm hearing echoed in this conversation is sort of how we locate the health without bypassing what isn't well. And so that's become really instrumental to my work, both as a writer and as a practitioner and as a teacher.
Well, I know that you have a personal story. You've experienced serious health problems and found that writing helped you. Tell us about your experience and how it led to this book.
Yeah, thanks. So I was diagnosed with something called Crohn's disease almost 25 years ago. So I became a very frequent flyer in hospitals and with practitioners and doctors. And I pretty quickly understood that while Western medicine could keep me not dead, which I absolutely needed, I needed a really different set of tools to understand how to live well in a body like mine. So I had a background in storytelling and public radio, and then also as a teacher and then in body work. And so I developed this practice called embodied writing, which is incredibly simple. It's just you begin with the body, simple movement or breath exercise, a writing prompt. But what I found as I taught it more and more was that it really ignited something for folks in an ability to connect to their own experience and their own story. And I'm thinking about what Matt said about how do we incubate stories that help people feel they belong. And so one of the powerful parts of this process, and a lot of the practices are shared in the book, Write Yourself Home, is that it is supporting you to create stories that you tell from the inside out and that help that sense of belonging in your own life.
And Johanna, would you say that this has helped you, if not heal from Crohn's disease, because I don't think you ever heal from it, but live with it, and has it helped your everyday life?
Yes, it's been a radical transformation for me. I mean, the tagline for the book is a creative guide for living well in the body you have. So, you know, whether or not you live with chronic illness, we all have bodies, we know that can be rough. And so how we practice connecting to that health, connecting to our story, really can be its own kind of medicine. And so I can live a really good life alongside having a chronic illness and have seen that work in a lot of different spaces.
Johanna, thank you so much for calling in. Johanna Franzl is the author of the new book that'll be out just next month, just a few weeks, Write Yourself Home. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We're talking now about healing and the arts. My guest, Matt Cahill, who's creative director for Hogfish Regenerative Arts. Christina Kuraz is program director for the Maine Arts Commission Arts and Health Roundtables. And Elisa Tiedemann is research program manager for the International Arts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins. We invite you to join the conversation. Our email address, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. Joining us now is author Carl Little, who you likely know from his many books about art in Maine. Hi, Carl. Thanks for calling in.
Good to talk to you.
You know, Carl, I have noticed that many hospitals and healthcare facilities hang art on the walls of hallways and waiting rooms. I always thought that was just to make the place seem less institutional, but it's more than that, isn't it?
It really is. And some of these hospitals, like St. Joseph's in Bangor, have really made a real attempt to bring art into the hallways of their institutions. The Healing Arts Commission at St. Joseph's has made a mission of presenting contemporary Maine artists, you know, as a way, yes, to kind of soothe and take away the sterile feeling of hospitals, but also to engage patients and staff and others in the artwork itself. They've had some wonderful shows. Paul Black, who is a wonderful, the late Paul Black was an impressionist painter from Portland. Gail Page, I saw her show there recently of abstract paintings. Nina Jerome, Jill Hoy, Diana Young. It's quite a lineup. I did want to mention, though, also that another art form is poetry. And I had an opportunity to write a piece about Gary Lawless last year. He's the owner of Gulf of Maine Books. And over the years, he spent a lot of time at Spindleworks, which is a wonderful organization in Brunswick for people who have intellectual disabilities. And he's brought poetry into that community and used it as a way to open communication and engage and engage these students and people in a creative manner. I really think this is a wonderful program that he's been doing.
Well, Carl, thanks so much for taking the time to call in. That was author Carl Little, who writes extensively about art in Maine. Elise, I wanted to ask you, do we know, are there, you know, I'm going to go back to hospitals and have paintings on the walls or in the waiting room or something like that. Are there certain kinds of paintings that are more effective than others? Is a landscape or something with certain colors or not really?
Yeah, I know one thing that I can speak to definitely in the research is kind of not necessarily visual art alone, but the just built environment of the room. So natural light, having a window where you could see nature, has had shown really positive effects. And I believe that there has been actual research on reducing a patient's need for pain medication based on the design of the hospital room that they're in. So, you know, having art in there and, like I said, light, or I think they found best is actual views of nature, but you can also have a screen where you have you know, use technology to have nature, so it feels almost a little bit more immersive. So I think that I can't speak to exactly the specific types of art, but I think that there's a lot of work being done in this place, in this area. And I think the fact that they've really found, I think it was almost up to like 30% change in needing pain medication when they had a room with those features, which is obviously really powerful. And there's also been some research on music in hospital rooms and having actually live musicians come in during procedures and being played. And that has also showed a lot of benefits for patients.
Wow. We'll go to Diana calling from Harpswell. Hi, Diana. Go ahead.
Hi there. I'm the director of the Onion Foundation, and I'm so glad you're doing this program today. We focus on making arts accessible to everyone.
Oh, dear. Diana, your call is breaking up. Shoot, I'm going to ask if you could maybe call back in just a minute. Because we can't hear you. I'm going to go to Jeannie calling from Portland. Hi, Jeannie. Go ahead.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Awesome. Well, I am representing Art Van, which is a nonprofit that provides mobile art therapy. We go into underserved communities and bring the supplies to people facing economic barriers like financial or transportation, and bring group art therapy. We have credentialed and board certified art therapists on our team. We love the Onion Foundation. They're a big supporter of ours, and Spindleworks is one of our neighbors in Brunswick as well. We serve over 1,000 participants from Western Maine to Midcoast Maine, and we really see the use of art therapy in these underserved communities, working with ages 3 to 18 years old, as well as senior citizens. It helps bring a peer-to-peer network and build emotional toolkits within these people that potentially can avoid acute care in the future. And conversations really range from anything like an everyday stressor to navigating more complex uncertainties like food insecurity or housing. But one of the things that we're really excited about that is upcoming is an art exhibit that we put on where our Art Van youth are able to hang their work next to a professional's. And while it's a fundraiser for us, what we have seen over the years, what's much more important and impactful, is that these Art Van youth are able to see their work hanging next to a professional's, and then we pay them 50% of the sale price of their art piece. And when we hand them a check for their work, it really shows them that their creativity matters and there is value in their artwork. And it's just been a really, really impactful event. I invite you all to that July 23rd at Mass Landing Brewing in Freeport. But we're really proud of the work that we've been able to bring to communities over the last 20 years. And we're really grateful to all of our supporters, including Maine Arts Commission, who has had us on their roundtables before as well.
Great. Jeannie, thanks so much for calling. Anything you'd like to add, Christina?
Well, I sent out a lot of hearts for you all. I'm so inspired by what Art Van is doing. In fact, we have a program called Maine Creates that funded several dozen projects, and Art Van was a part of that. Southern Maine, bringing children together to create art. So if you have Art Van or need Art Van in your community, please reach out to them. I wish when my son was little that I had known about what Art Van is doing. So.
Thank you, Jeannie. Yeah, congratulations on the work that you're doing. We'll go also to Portland and Mike. Hi, Mike, go ahead.
Hi, in my personal life, art has been huge in helping me survive what was a very stressful occupation. Both and in a range of stuff, in music, both playing and singing, the experience of a whole ensemble of musicians taking a breath together is a really powerful one. It's really unifying. And woodworking on the other end of it is a solitary, contemplative thing to do. And the combination of those really, I think, saved my career. I was able to, you know, use that. I call my wood shop my sanctuary.
Mike, thank you. Thank you for calling in. And it occurs to me, Elisa, I asked you earlier why, what's happening. And it's so interesting because it seems to me it's hard to, when there's so many different ways of doing art and taking in art, and there's so many different ways that it affects people, it's a hard thing to measure, is what I'm guessing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely true. And I think there, with you know, the advances in technology, we're finding new ways to measure it. You know, thinking about, because live performance is something that is so, seems, you know, we hear such powerful testimonies. And so we've been exploring ideas around things like mobile EEG. You know, traditionally, when you think about trying to measure physiological symptoms, you think about being in a lab hooked up to all these wires and to machines. And obviously, that is difficult to translate that into the real world. But there's definitely been a lot of advances in ways that we can do that, as well as with virtual reality. So, you know, having people be able to kind of have an immersive experience and then be able to measure that in the lab is where we're starting to see a lot of that physiological data coming from.
Yeah. And I'm guessing it's important to be able to measure it. So for example, if a doc wants to prescribe art therapy, there's some evidence and proof to get insurance companies to pay for it.
Sure. Absolutely. And there's so many different ways that, you know, we can talk about it. One of the things that we've also been involved in is some economic analysis, which is also going to be really important when we're talking about getting insurance to cover these things. So, you know, there was a study that was done on music for Alzheimer's and the economic kind of benefits of that for society. And so I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of that research as well, to be able to really to get these things paid for by insurance.
We'll go to Diana again from the Onion Foundation. Diana, let's see if we can hear you now.
I'm on an old-fashioned landline, so better.
Love that.
I'm so glad that you're doing this program today. The Onion Foundation focuses on arts and making art available to people throughout the entire state of Maine. Art Van is one of our grantees, and Hogfish, Spindlework, some of the ones that people mentioned today. And we actually did a three-part series. People can see it on our website, onionfoundation.org, all about arts and well-being. And it talks a little bit about the research that is there, how people who participate in these programs have improved memory, there's reduced rate of substance use, and also just feelings of connectedness and joy. And then we also talk about some of the incredible organizations in Maine that are really busy offering arts programming, both arts education, exhibits, performances. And our goal here is to strengthen those organizations so they can grow and include more and more people. One group, Maine Inside Out, focuses particularly not only on youth, but people who are incarcerated. it really gives people an opportunity to express themselves, but also, as your program's discussing, have physical and emotional well-being. So this is just an important program. I personally have attended one of the Hogfish's programs, and I can tell you they're incredibly powerful, really enjoyable, really intense, and I really encourage all your listeners to go to the next one.
Thanks, Diana, for calling in. Which Hogfish performance did you attend?
There was one focused on grief, and I think that was very powerful. It was, I think, really well attended, and there was all different kinds of art so that people could respond to whatever kind of calls them and moves them. So I just know that the programs are incredibly creative, everything from writing to Alexander technique to music performances, including by Wabanaki musicians. Just really powerful kind of programming.
Diana, thank you so much for calling. Matt?
Thank you, Diana. And thanks for the support. What I'm thinking about from all this really interesting talks is just how I'm the black sheep of a doctor family that they might even be listening at the moment. Grandfather was OBGYN. Uncle's OBGYN. My father was a cardiologist, said he's the first to practice above the belt. Mom, a pediatrician. Brother, a neurologist. And I thought I was going into the art realm to get away from it, but then I realized slowly that I was actually doing everything up to surgery and pills is where I love to be and think about. And like an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure kind of idea. And like, what are we doing as a community, as our institutions, depending on your viewpoint, may or may not be serving us in the way that we hope they are serving us? And how are we gathering in large structures? Sometimes I think of Russian dolls, that like the container that's holding the container of you. And when it's being held in a certain way, you don't even have to think about breathing or think about that it's okay to share that you have some grief. And when it's not being held for you, that's really tricky to do. It requires a lot of you, the individual. So I think that's one of the areas that we're working on as things are becoming more and more digital and more spread out. It's like, it feels like in some ways the in-person gathering is even more and more important as a dichotomy, and exploring how we can make that beautiful for everybody.
Christina.
Yeah, Matt, I love the analogy of the Russian doll, and it really is a good example of how arts and health is layers and layers of different sectors. And one of those sectors is workforce development. So the teaching artist that now is coming up through that we're going to need for workforce to address 29% of our population are older adults. And so we're going to need teaching artists to teach those classes, things like creative aging, which are consecutive classes, 6 to 8 weeks for older adults to be able to come together and learn a different art form. But we're going to need the teaching artists. So we are planning on rolling out some trainings here in the next month. People can sign up to become a teaching artist in creative aging if they would like. And it's free, funded through the A.E. Mickelson Foundation and the National Association for Art Agencies.
Well, we have to take another quick break. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today we're talking about the intersection of arts, health, and healing. My guests, Christina Carras with the Maine Arts Commission, Matt Cahill with Hogfish Regenerative Arts, and Elisa Tiedemann with the International Arts and Mind Lab. Share your comments and questions. Send an email if you're quick, talk@mainepublic.org. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. I have an email here from CR. Really enjoyed a book called Your Brain on Art. And after reading it, discovered the author isn't an artist, but on the artist spectrum. And this is by Ivy Ross and Susan Magsiman. And Elisa, this is your colleague and the person who founded Arts and Mind Lab, correct?
Yeah, Susan is fantastic. She was working on that book kind of in secret. I was working with her at the lab, and then all of a sudden she kind of said, I'm coming out with a book. And then next thing you know, it was a New York Times bestseller. So it is fantastic and really kind of, you know, a great depiction of all of the work that the lab does, as well as the Neuro Arts Blueprint, which is kind of a looking at how we can move this field of neuro arts forward. So I definitely recommend everyone check it out because it really gets into what's happening in your brain and at a physiological level when engaging in different art forms.
We'll go to Kristen calling from Goldsboro. Hi, Kristen, go ahead.
Hi. I was an artist before I was in a very bad car accident and I had a traumatic brain injury. And when I started doing art, and it took me years because my hands wouldn't work, but I started doing art more because my little sister had passed away. So I started to do cartoons of our childhood. And it took me a long time, but I did about 90 of them. And some were worse than others because, like I said, I couldn't control my hand. But I could feel my brain actually working better, and my memory got better, and it just was such a positive experience to do it again. And but I also want to say that I heard you speak about cranial sacral therapy, and I had that done, and that is excellent work also.
Kristen, thank you so much for calling in, and I'm so glad you're doing better. And Elisa, are you surprised to hear that as Kristen is doing her art, she could feel her brain healing?
No, I mean, it's always incredible to hear kind of the lived experience of the work that we do. I know there's definitely research on drawing and doodling, kind of lowering stress hormones. And I think what you also said is powerful about being able to kind of create your childhood memories through those drawings. I think that can be a very healing process. So there was probably a lot going on. I'm really glad to hear that was a healing process for you.
Kristen, thanks for calling in. We'll go to Kylie calling from South Portland. Hi, Kylie, go ahead.
Hi, I am a suicide policy specialist in the state of Maine, and I just wanted to name that the arts are a wonderful suicide prevention method. And it's not just the act of creation, which is absolutely a prevention method, but to receive art or something that somebody has made for you by hand. And it doesn't have to be fine art, you know, like one of the things that we do in my little group called MUSE, which stands for Mainers Understanding Suicidal Experiences, is we do a friendship bracelet drive. And the act of receiving something that somebody has carefully woven by hand reminds somebody who might be struggling that they are cared for. And it's just a really remarkable opportunity for people who are experiencing something that is so stigmatized to be able to use metaphors or similes or to represent the way that they're feeling in art rather than say it out loud, because there's a lot of fear around what happens if you tell people that you're experiencing suicidal ideation. And so having creative ways to express yourself alleviates that burden and that secrecy of holding that in by yourself. And there's some incredible artists in Maine. I want to shout out the poet Maya Williams, who writes about her suicidal experiences. And there's this fear that talking about suicide makes people more apt to die by suicide, but that is just categorically false. It is known that if you see yourself represented in other works of art and other people's work, then you feel less alone and more apt to ask for help. So I just wanted to uplift the grief events that Hogfish is doing, the social prescribing that Christina is working on. All of this is going to help with our suicide prevention efforts, which is important because it's the second leading cause of death for Mainers aged 10 to 44.
Kylie, I'm so glad you called in. And this is so interesting to me that the gift, the handmade gift, the artistic gift, because I'm sure that everyone listening today has known someone they're worried about and feels helpless. So knitting that person a hat or sculpting something for them or making a friendship bracelet could really be powerful.
Absolutely. A hand-painted card, even just a thoughtful handwritten note. There's an evidence-based practice called caring contacts that hospitals do for folks who are discharging after involuntary hospitalization. And they found that if you send a handwritten note, that person is statistically less likely to die by suicide. So if you're worried about someone, just show them that you care by creating something for them.
Wow. Kylie, thank you for that. Those words of wisdom, I'm sure so many people appreciate them. Let's see, we're going to go to Kurt from the Maine State Music Theater. Hi, Kurt.
Hey, how are you? A quick shout out to Matt and Hogfish. I've attended an event there and was astounded at how amazing it was. And then earlier you had the Onion Foundation, and of course they are just unbelievable because their founders actually show up and partake of what they help fund, which is pretty awesome. But as to the topic for today, I wanted to say that my favorite part of my job is having people tell me that Maine State Music Theater and spending 2 hours with us rejuvenates their day and makes them changes their mood and makes them better. Historically, I know that over time in the Depression, whenever there's an economic downturn, theater survives because people want to be happier and we brighten their spirits. But even more powerfully, I think that when we present something that is emotional or maybe has a sad content to it in the theater, we have permission to live in that feeling for a little while, which helps us maybe not erase that feeling, but helps us deal with it and helps us get rid of it. The best example of that is Ghost, the musical, which the musical follows sort of the storyline of the movie. But I believe people love it because it gives them permission to miss people in the past that society tells us we're not supposed to miss. We're not supposed to allow ourselves to feel those feelings. We're supposed to keep marching on. Well, that gives us a couple hours to live in that, you know, that memory of those people, which helps us move on then.
Kurt, thank you so much for calling in. And Elisa, this reminds me of a point I really wanted to make sure we made during this program. One of the things most interesting to me to learn, because we have done Maine Calling programs on arts therapy, but that one does not have to actually be doing that art, painting that painting, singing that song, dancing that dance, but just attending or you know, going to a concert or going to a museum has benefit. That's really interesting. Is that sort of new?
I think that's probably, again, people who have been attending art performances could probably have always told you, but I think it's a concept that we're seeing more in the research. One thing that I think, you know, there's so much that can be happening when you're just beholding art. As the caller was talking, I was thinking about the idea of perspective taking. You know, when you're taking in a live performance, you can be seeing other people's stories and there's a little bit of distance from it, and you can, you know, build empathy as well. And same thing with reading literature. You know, it really creates these opportunities. And I think something that's also really, really interesting is there's actually been research showing that there's can be synchronicity that happens in an audience that's seeing a live performance. So there can actually be brain waves that are synchronizing as they are all experiencing some type of emotive state, which is just so fascinating. And so much could be done there around conflict resolution. And, you know, there's just a lot that we could learn from just beholding art.
Okay, pardon the pun, but that is kind of mind-blowing that there could be synchronizing in brainwaves and in a experience. And Christina and Matt are both nodding like, well, yeah.
Well, it's something we joke about that, like, you have to have a theater of a certain size in order for people to laugh, like, just to feel comfortable. If you think of, like, five people, it just feels like, can I laugh? I don't know. But when there's a certain mass number where there is that feeling of synchronization, and it really can like help you really move into that release that Kurt was talking about and other guests were talking about. And so that's kind of why at Hogfish we're working on kind of that size and scale, so that again there's this kind of Russian doll container that's holding the individual for this feeling of transformation, that it's not all left on them to do all these beautiful individual practices, which I also teach and work on, but kind of working on both sides, both like from the bottom up and the top down.
Oh my goodness, so many calls, so little time. I'm going to try to squeeze in one or two. Go to Linda in Washington. Hi, Linda, go ahead.
Hey there, how are you?
Great.
I just wanted to call and say that we need to thank and give a shout out to all of our public school arts teachers. I taught art for 25 years, and we've always known about the healing power of art, and it's wonderful as a teacher how you can connect with students that might not be able to function that well in public schools, but they find that the arts are just this really great way to express themselves. And seeing kids just always want to hang out in art rooms and listen listening to music in art class and all that kind of stuff, we just know how beneficial this is to kids. So if we can still keep promoting Maine, you know, K through 12 schools by supporting the arts programs and appreciating how important those are as well.
Thanks Linda, so thank you for calling. Show. And Linda will be our last call. I apologize to all of you waiting and all of the emails because so many interesting stories supporting this whole concept. And thank you for our guest today, Elisa Tiedemann, Research Program Manager at the International Arts and Mind Lab at Johns Hopkins, Matt Cahill, Creative Director with Hogfish Regenerative Arts, and Christina Karaz, Program Director of the Maine Arts Commission Arts and Health Roundtables. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, the role of craft in Maine, from Wabanaki baskets to wooden furniture. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.